Welcome back to another episode of Right to the Source. My name is Robin Harrison and I'm here as always with Mr. Ed Birkin from H2 Gambling Capital. Back from the Scottish Highlands, Ed, how are you?
I'm well, thank you, Robin. Yeah, I had a nice week up in Scotland, where I was for the podcast last week. Surprisingly good weather. I climbed a Munro, didn't get lost. But yeah, all is good. Good to be back in the office and see the pile of work that's accumulated and talk about Africa.
Yes, yes. We promised and we will deliver. We're going to talk about Africa this week. Obviously, it's a really interesting time for the industry. And we kind of touched on this at the end of last week's podcast in that I think there's a general kind of trend of looking for new places to grow. You know, it's like over recent years, it's been competing against a relatively kind of small number of markets. You know, Europe's been kind of, I suppose, tapering off. All the attention's been in the US. But as we've talked a lot about in this podcast already, we've talked a lot about Latin America, and Africa is a region that I think is really interesting. Like, it's one that I feel has always been sort of potentially the next big thing. I don't feel it's really kind of jumped to the forefront of the industry's mind, but I definitely feel that's starting to change. I mean, you're seeing a number of brands starting to really kind of do some good business there, you know, and really kind of create something quite distinct in the market. You know, I'm thinking, of course, about Betway, you know, Supergroup, and, you know, the joint venture 888 Africa that, you know, Chris Coyne, Andy Lee, people like that are building up, you know, these real kind of pan-national brands. And as ever, I'm keen to get your thoughts. I mean, like, what kind of size are we looking at for that African market? I mean, like, how kind of big is it currently?
Hey, Robin. Well, it's good to talk about Africa this week, although I feel that given we've spent a week, we've had to prepare, as we said last week, we were going to talk about Africa, we perhaps should have used this opportunity to maybe get our first guest on, maybe someone like Andy Lee from 888 Africa, who probably knows more about the market, in fairness. But we can work on that at a later date. I mean, in terms of our figures, we estimate the market of generating about $11 billion of GGR this year. But through a series of reports we're working on, and we did some back-of-the-envelope figures that suggested if you had the whole of the African market regulating online sports and iGaming at a reasonable tax rate, operator-friendly commercial market, it could generate $20 to $22 billion of gross win by 2029. Now, that's not going to happen because obviously not every market will regulate commercially and not every market will regulate in a operator-friendly model. And we can perhaps talk about the issues there at the moment. But if we were to broadly split up Africa, and I appreciate not offending anyone in Africa, every single country is different and unique. But if we were to broadly split it, then you've got the kind of Francophone, Central, Western African markets. Broadly, lottery, monopoly, PMU-based, and not all of them, there are exceptions, and they're commercially regulated. And then you have the Anglophile, kind of East Southern African markets, which again, not all of them, a lot of them are probably viewed as more commercially friendly ones of having a more open market. So, you know, the market potential is pretty much double what I think the market is at the moment. But that is a figure that I don't think will ever necessarily be seen. And as you say, it is a market that some people are talking about, but it's not really got mainstream. People have been asking about it for a number of years. Not only is it perhaps each individual market, with the exception of South Africa perhaps, or if you're one of the biggest ones in Nigeria or Kenya, probably doesn't necessarily move the dial in terms of market share. It's also quite difficult to really get into without, you know, you need local partners and you need to dedicate a lot of resource, which is why, as you say, you know, the likes of what Supergroup have done there is actually hats off. It's pretty impressive what they've managed to build.
And you mentioned it there, but let's drill down a bit on South Africa, because obviously biggest market on the continent, but one that I think, in keeping with that theme of unrealized potential, you know, has never actually regulated RNG games. I mean, obviously fixed odds products are allowed, which is why you see a lot of live dealer offerings in the country, but without that iCasino piece, I mean, what's that kind of market size? Like, when we talk about that, I think it was 11 billion figure. I mean, like, how much of that is, you know, concentrated in that one country?
South Africa's a large part of it. And the question we get a lot in our data is, why are you showing no iCasino? Because, you know, you look at, let's say, Sun International's reports and they spit out iCasino. I would say the fact is, it is not legal. And when it's reported by the regulator, it is reported as sports betting, because it is a fixed odds product, a bit like the FOTIs game machines in the betting shops. So we have to then make our own estimate of how much of that is iGaming or iGaming fixed odds gaming, what do you call it, effectively fixed odds betting, but with, on gaming content. And then we do that by looking at the kind of growth in turnover versus growth in GGR and what kind of hold margins you're looking for the two of them. So if I'd been more prepared, I could give you the answer of what split we'd actually have. But I can look at that while you are thinking of some other questions.
Yeah, well, thank you for that very whistle-stop tour of South Africa. Now, get searching, because next up, almost kind of sticking with this iCasino theme, because I think one of the recurring kind of trends we see across the different African markets is very much that it's sports-led. You know, sports is kind of first and foremost, and iCasino hasn't perhaps taken off in the same way. And in particular here, I'm thinking about Nigeria. Obviously, it's been a while since Clarion used to run Ice Africa, but talking to local stakeholders, I mean, there's some, you know, really excellent kind of, you know, people I've met from Nigeria in particular in the market, you know, chief among them, Yahaya Maikori of Law Alliance. And it's always felt sports-led. I mean, is that fair to say? Or, you know, do you feel there has been a bit of a shift? You know, is online casino becoming more of a presence in somewhere like Nigeria?
Yeah, I think if we go back a year, 2 years, I think the big story, but what made Nigeria different to maybe the likes of Kenya was, whereas crash games were really taking off in markets like Kenya because they're very simple iGaming games, they can work with all the technology, smartphones, per se. Nigeria was, their equivalent of iGaming was really virtuals. And that was a big, big growth driver. Virtual sports and were their kind of equivalent of iGaming. Now, I think that iGaming has started to kind of come into the market, and it'd be interesting to see how much of a share of virtuals it's taken or whether it really is additive. But it is, you know, it is very much a sports-dominated market. You know, it still has a reasonable retail size as well. I think it's about a third of the market's probably still retail, although we can forecast that to be kind of flattish going forward. I think slightly down in the last year or so. But yeah, they hadn't really seen the aviator, you know, online casino that was kind of Kenya really doing particularly well there. But virtuals was what was probably the big growth driver of the overall betting market.
Okay, it's interesting.
Just to come back to you, Robin, now I've got our excellent data up.
So, that was some very quick searching. Well done.
Well, there you go. I mean, our website is not the most user-friendly, but when you've been working here for as many years as I have, you kind of work it out. So we have, in terms of winnings of Czar, so this year, well, say ballpark figures, you're looking at around, for online betting, around 10 billion, and for online gaming, being 20 billion.
So this is the entire continent, or?
That's just South Africa.
Just South Africa, so 10 billion in...
And 20 billion for iGaming. So that's the kind of, you know, that's kind of showing how big, you know, we think the iGaming, or not iGaming, the gaming-fronted fixed odds product is.
And what's that in pounds or dollars or euros?
So, our estimate this year of 23 billion in euros is 1.15 billion euros.
Okay, 1.15, so it's maybe about kind of 10% of that 11 billion figure.
So that's just for the iCasino. Yeah, if we're looking at the overall... You're looking at about 1.75, yeah, so about 15% or so.
Okay, 15% of the total continent. I mean, first thing jumps out is that means there's a lot of, you know, kind of extra markets. And do want to touch on Kenya in a minute, but I think it's just coming back to someone like Supergroup or 888 Africa. I think what's interesting there, and what kind of, you know, I think is kind of particularly interesting for Africa, is the opportunity for these kind of economies of scale for a business to become a pan-national operator, you know, operating in multiple markets, similar to, you know, somewhere like Europe. You know, I don't want to always go back to Europe with these things, but it is the most mature online market. So I think that comparison is worth kind of being made. You know, and what we've seen there is, well, we do have, you know, in certain markets, local heroes. You know, we mentioned Betclic last week. You could also mention Winamax in France. You mentioned Tipico in Germany. You know, people like companies like that. What do you think about the prospects, you know, considering these difficulties of more people following the super groups, the 888 Africas, in creating that multinational presence across Africa? I mean, do you feel that's an opportunity? Because you mentioned earlier the difficulty in the, you know, the obviously a lot of differing regulatory frameworks, you know, kind of markets, individual country markets being of different sizes. But is there a scope for someone to kind of knit it all together?
Yeah, and I think you are seeing that. So if you look at the likes of someone like a Bet Pour, for example, you know, they are in multiple countries, and you know, that's, I think they're an operator who you would put with the likes of Betway, you know, who are kind of probably trying to see a bit more homogenization of the regulations, which would make it easier. You know, I think we talked last week on, you know, about Argentina and the provincial regulation, and how actually, you know, if you can get the provinces, everyone can have their own regulation, and so, you know, everyone can have their own tax rates. But if you get the general regulation and technical aspects pretty similar, that makes it much easier for people to then want to come on shore and get the licenses. You know, one of the big issues we see in what I see in Africa is really the tax. I know people talk about tax a lot, and it's easy to say this is a hostile market for tax. Arguably, tax isn't actually the biggest issue in most markets. I mean, if you've got a large market with a well-functioning market, I mean, look at New York, you know, they've got 51% tax. Now, that wouldn't work in most markets, and I actually think most operators wish they hadn't agreed to that. They naively thought they could get it down after they regulated, which was ridiculous. So I digress. Or Germany, you know, turnover-based tax, but actually it's the product restrictions which are probably more of an issue. And it's not the level of tax. I think it's this withholding tax that seems to be very popular in Africa, which I think is a big issue for the players, really, not necessarily for people getting regulated, but for players wanting to play. And it also leads to risky behaviour. So we've done this analysis where actually the average number of legs that people bet on are multiples, because multiples betting is the big thing in Africa. Low stake, high margin products. They don't do singles. So in markets with withholding tax, the average bet size is 12 and a half legs versus 10 legs without. And it gives the operator another 3% margin, but it's just showing that's the risk of behaviour. So if you are looking at some responsible gambling aspects, putting in a tax which actively encourages players to have to make riskier bets to get a higher return, try and generate a higher return because of the taxes that are being taken out, is just an issue. And that's something that isn't really, I don't think, understood. And on the flip side, as we've seen in Kenya, which has been a disaster with the flip-flopping of taxes and operators leaving the market, I think on the flip side is, you know, yes, the regulators or the governments want more tax, which is probably one of the reasons they do it. But also there's a concern about the proliferation of gambling. And so if they see the market collapse, then I get the impression from far away that they're like, well, okay, people are gambling less, that's good. Well, they're not. They're just gambling with offshore operators. Yeah. Like, you just cannot, as sad as it is to say, you cannot stop it. So, again, it comes back to the whole, you know, bringing people on shore, consumer protection, having a well-regulated market. And we've just done 3 reports, hopefully doing some more on Africa, which I believe are going to be live on the IGB site soon. They're talking about what you need for a well-regulated market, second one on consumer protection, and the third one on tax. And it just shows the distortive impact of withholding taxes and then comparing state taxes. And to be honest, that can be applied to any market, really. So I think it's quite an interesting read to see, you know, how it affects player behaviour, how the effect of tax rates, etc. The other issue with not issue per se, but what's helped grow the market so well has been some of the payment processing, you know, so like M-Pesa and things like that. But again, in most markets, you tend to have this single payment provider, or at least majority of mobile payments going through one. I think some of the fees, you know, if the fees are about 1 to 3.5% of transactions, that doesn't seem like a lot. But actually, when you apply that to the GGR, they can be 10-15% of GGR. So you start putting all of these taxes on top. It's not surprising that, you know, apparently not every operator fully declares all of their revenues to pay all of their taxes. We find that later when we get the, you know, you have some of the some of the regulators who do put out data, or some of the governments or tax authorities, which are very few, but put it out and they say things like, oh, tax collected has increased by, you know, 87% year on year. This isn't the market growth. We're just collecting more taxes than we did before from people. So the data in the market is very hard.
And you mentioned that they're a bit earlier, actually, but also I think kind of talking about taxes, it's worth bringing that up, which is Kenya, because, well, I mean, it was fascinating. During the pandemic, really, you saw this boom. You know, brands like SportPesa became, you know, kind of like I mean, you know, huge in Kenya, but also, let's face it, internationally renowned. You know, they were on various football teams. You know, they were Everton's sponsor. I think they sponsored some form of, you know, racing, maybe F1 or one of the, you know, the formulas. It's not my sport. I'm not that into it. But that was really sort of derailed by the excise tax. It's, you know, Sport Pesach pulled out of the market for an extended period, obviously kind of came back in at a later date. I think it was Betika did the same. I mean, has that market stabilised? Or is that still... Or has it ever really been able to recover? You know, because the tax was removed, reintroduced. There was a lot of kind of, you know, tax rate hokey-cokey going on. You know, it was in, it was out.
Yes, we talk about, you know, the three options of estates tax, GGR tax, net win tax, which is the least distortive because of the tax bonuses, and the excise tax. And with Kenya, they had a estates tax and an excise tax. So, yeah, 2019, they increased estates tax from 5% to 20%, which was bad enough. But then they launched proceedings against a load of operators claiming they'd underpaid tax, which they may have done. Within this, how they were calculating these taxes was highly disputable, and that's what left Sport Pisa to exit the market. They're estimated to have a 65% share. So, you know, that had an issue. 2020, they realised that actually all this increase in tax meant there's lower tax revenues. So they were proposed to scrap it entirely, which they did. And then it was introduced in 2021, I think around 7.5%. Yep. Then it increased to 12.5%, 15% in 2023. And although there were a lot of operators in the market, another 10 companies left in 2024 because of this tax increase. So you've got this large tax increase on a large tax on stakes, plus you have the excise tax on the players. I mean, the problem is with the tax on stakes is that how do you do it? Is that paid by the operator, or is that effectively viewed as being paid by the player? So if a player, and let's explain the difference, you know, if a player is betting 100, you know, to whatever currency, let's just say, yeah, Kenyan shillings, then, you know, do you say, right, we effectively need to set our odds, we're going to have to pay 20 shillings in tax as the operator. So do we set our odds, you know, so badly that we need to make at least 30% average GGR marginal sports? Which in Africa, it helps the fact that they do lots of multiples. So it's not like we're doing singles where you just wouldn't be able to really set those odds. But do you do it that way? Or do you say, well, actually, we're just going to effectively make this tax a player. So they're putting 100 shillings on. Do you take 20 off and say that's a tax? And actually the wager is 80 shillings. And then you can set lower odds. And that's how it kind of tends to be done on the latter, which I suppose makes the odds a bit more comparable to operators who are not paying the tax. But on the flip side, if you know you're going to wager 100 shillings, and then you know you can do it with an offshore operator and wager 100 shillings is your stake, or with an onshore, you're actually only going to be able to wager 80 and your returns are going to be lower, it makes it difficult to compete.
That's a fair point. And just before we finish, any other kind of interesting markets H2 is tracking in Africa?
I think that if we're looking at some of the markets that the tax they're doing, I would say, just trying to have a look at the different tax rates in the markets now, well prepared. Yeah, I think there are some interesting markets, and it's really the ones that are probably being more operator friendly in terms of their tax regime. So DRC, Tanzania, Uganda are ones that are, I hear some of the local operators talking about, which are not ones you necessarily hear more international operators. You know, they tend to just kind of name the big ones. Whenever I get asked about it, it's Africa, then talk about South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria, maybe throw in a Cameroon or something. But I think there's a lot of other ones that there are operators, local operators there who are, you know, working with the regulators to try and get a bit more friendly, and they can probably under the radar make some reasonable money. And it'd be interesting to see if in a few years' time the true size of some of these markets comes out, because we try our hardest to estimate it. As someone once said to me, maybe you want to cut this from the actual one, country is actually after ICE. They said, oh, you're from H2. I love your data. I mean, all your data on Africa is wrong, but it's the closest that we actually get. But that's fine, because every operator has two sets of books, so you'll never be able to get it perfectly accurate. Which at first I thought was a bit of an insult, the fact that our data's wrong, you know. He said, out of all of one out there, it's as close as you can get. I think when you're dealing with those issues, when you're dealing with tax authorities who admit that their tax increase is nothing to do with market growth, just because they're actually enforcing more people to pay the tax they're owed, you know, it becomes difficult. So it is very much a best estimate. And if I'm being honest, hopefully we're doing as good a job as we can. But, you know, with the exception of South Africa that actually poor stuff, it's there's a lot of estimates and using however many years of knowledge we've got in the business to try and come up with the best guess, really.
Well, there you have it, everyone. We have talked Africa. We've gone through some of the most interesting markets. And this week, let's not set out what we're going to talk about next week and see what happens. As Ed mentioned earlier, we probably could have done with the guest day to add a bit of additional colour on the market, and that's something we are going to be looking at bringing into future podcasts. There's a lot of really talented people in the industry, and we should probably showcase them rather than Ed's banner and my living room and high chair in the background. So, everyone, thank you very much for listening. This has been another episode of Right to the Source with Robin Harrison and Ed Birkin. See you next time.